The best podcast in baseball is brought to you by Closets by Design. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Imagine your home totally organized with Closets by Design. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
The Cardinals come home to face the Brewers, and they are limping after a 1-6 road trip. We'll have plenty of time in the podcast to run forensics on that road trip. But I just want to get to your thoughts on this. If the Cardinals' focus is on developing, and they talk about developing winners, what is the price then of not having a bullpen that can avoid the volatility of losing? Is there an argument, Kevin, that a team that wants to focus on youth actually needs to not do so in the bullpen?
Well, I mean, there's a case for that because what happens there trickles down to everywhere else, right?
Three, two, one. Oh, come on, Marvel. Seriously?
Dogs are awesome.
Marvel. Ladies and gentlemen, Marvel the dog. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, and I'm joined this week by someone who will stop me from talking this fast, and that is, of course...
By talking even faster than you?
That's right. Just by not letting me talk at all. That, of course, is KMOX 1120 AM, Kevin Wheeler, Miami grad... So big.
I did graduate, so that's true. That's a good, yeah, I did.
No, you did. You were a student athlete who graduated.
Yeah.
You were an athlete. No, you were a student athlete.
Yeah, I was an academic scholarship guy who ended up walking on a baseball team.
That's correct. And catching some bullpens.
Yes, lots of bullpens. So many bullpens, like you can't even count them.
Which is fitting because that's probably where we're going to spend a lot of the time in this conversation.
Where I live my life, in the bullpen.
Where you live your life, in the bullpen. All right, so here's my question for you. And we'll dive into the road trip that was and the division series that will be. And we can run all what happened, why it happened, and what to make of a 1-6 trip through the National League East, out to New York, and then back to Atlanta. But what I think is at the crux of this is the Cardinals are talking about this being a development year. Advertised it. They're gonna take the heat for it. They're going to not sell tickets as a result of it. They know it. So if this is a development year, and it is about giving guys opportunity to play through struggles in a way that the Cardinals, when chasing the standings, never did, right? They were impatient with moves. They were going to be patient. But part of that is also they talk about developing winners, Kevin. If you're going to develop winners, is there an argument that you don't develop young players in the bullpen, creating the volatility that then leads to losses that doesn't then reward the other parts of the team for playing well? Is part of developing a team actually having a veteran bullpen to hold down the wins, to hold down the games when the team plays well, to get some kind of positive reinforcement, or as teams describe, develop winning?
Yeah, I'm different than a lot of people in the sense that I don't think you learn
that
how to
true.
Win. I don't think you learn how to win. I think you play better, and when you have a lot of good players, you win. That doesn't mean that there aren't characteristics that grow out of that, right? Like being hyper-competitive in really important spots, being the same guy in really mm-hmm. important spots. So like, you know, we always talk about what Derek Jeter was, right? Mr. November.
He was just the same.
He was the same guy in the postseason that he was in the regular yep. season. He didn't do anything special. He just did what he always did. And right. that's not easy, right? That's hard. That's actually a big deal. So mm-hmm. I think you develop that in individual players, but I don't think that a bullpen blowing leads changes the kind of at-bats that Jordan Walker is going to take. I don't think it changes how a starting pitcher is going to perform. It does, though. It does impact other relievers, and it puts a lot of wear and tear on guys in the bullpen when you have to hide a player that you won't use, or mm-hmm. when you're going to pitch short because you're going with a six-man starting rotation, which, by the way, is fine. You just need to be able and willing to manage it, right? You have to be able to use that Memphis shuttle when guys are starting to get worn down and not feel like you're just going to be pushing it with the same guys. I mean, you know, you got two guys on pace for like 88, 89 appearances.
Yeah.
And they're the two guys you can count on before Helsley. If you burn out Leahy and Maton, you're done. You know, like, think about how bad this can crash if you burn those guys out. So you have to
2023 was that.
Yes, exactly. And you have to be, to me, there's a difference. So I guess the way I would phrase this is I'm not sure that I'm all that worried about guys learning how to win, because mm-hmm. I think first you have to be good enough. And then once you're good enough, you have to be able to learn how to do things in big games, in big moments in the postseason that, like, again, basically just replicate what you always do and occasionally exceed it, right, depending on circumstance, because you're going to face better pitching in the postseason than you will on average in the regular season. Yeah. So there are elements of learning to win, but I think that comes after being good enough. And, you know, when you're looking at the way the bullpen is now and where I, you know, where I think it is where we can kind of figure out how they can adapt. See, that's the thing. And you know this, Derek. I brought this up on this podcast a million times, talked about it on KMOX all last year and all winter. One characteristic this team needs to be better at is adaptability. When things aren't going right, do you have an alternative plan? Do you have an answer that may not be a perfect answer, right? Like, Riley O'Brien might not be better than what you have, but he can't be worse.
That's interesting.
So sometimes you have to try things to know if they're going to work.
that's such a fascinating, like, metric or angle or lens or whatever you want to use to describe, like the notion of, like, you usually think, all right, we're going to promote to get better, right? Or promote to get fresher. You know,
right. And that's a big deal too, by the way. Yeah.
But if you start thinking in terms of, like, promote to not get worse, that's not to not get worse.
It's just that can't be worse.
Like, I'm just saying there's
nobody you can call up that's going to pitch worse than Fernandez has pitched.
I know.
It's not going to happen. So there's no risk. The worst risk is it's what it already is.
We're saying the same thing. We're just messaging it different. We're just doing the Don Draper a little different. My messaging is, like, you're promoting the guy because it can't make you worse.
Right. It can't.
It's a fascinating, you know,
but it might make you better.
It might, but that's not what your decision is based on. Your decision is that it's new and not worse.
Well, you just don't have to have
that's fine.
Like what Ollie said earlier this week, right? He said, look, I'm paraphrasing, but he said basically there's no cavalry coming from Memphis. There's nobody there that's really going to dramatically change things. And even if you feel that way, and it might be true, you don't know until you try it. Like, you don't know if Matt Swanson can get major league hitters out until you let him get major league hitters out or fail.
I asked. I was like, why? Like, if you're going to learn, you got to learn sometime. And it sure seemed like that was the moment to learn, because what was he going to do that wasn't different? And, you know, the explanation, right. And I'm talking about specifically about Wednesday in Atlanta,
right.
You know, the game, they were trying to avoid Ryan Fernandez. The game wouldn't let them.
Right.
That whole game is different if JoJo Romero doesn't give up two hits. Right.
Yeah.
Because then it gets to a spot where they don't want the matchup for JoJo Romero, the lefty against right-handed batters. And that puts Ryan Fernandez in the game. I asked about that because I wanted to know, like, well, how far out of the way were they going to go? And that was the answer. They were going to avoid Ryan Fernandez until the matchup and the performance in that inning by JoJo forced it. Then he's into the game. And because my thinking was like, well, why not Swanson? Like, you're there. He's there. You know,
like I said, it can't be worse than what Fernandez has been, right?
Right. But their thought was, and this, you can debate this, I just want to offer it up as their thought. Their thought was what they saw from Fernandez the previous outing was better. His stuff was better. His pitch profiles or movement profiles, or whatever, were better. And so that this was going to be the step forward for him, building off of what he did in the previous outing. Not a step back. So just that was the thinking. Now you can argue that, totally say, like, well,
yeah, I mean, honestly, that's pretty,
that's okay. That's the data, not the production.
Well, also, like, that's like saying, well, Jordan Walker had three hard hit balls, so now he's going to bat third.
That is exactly what it is.
Right. I mean, like, this is a different thing. This isn't just giving a guy an opportunity. This is game on the line.
That is exactly you nailed it. That is exactly right. And you can have an issue with that. Fans can have an issue with it. And that is exactly the decision that Marmol defended and explained and said that we cannot talk about the young hitters getting an opportunity and any different than we talk about the relievers getting an opportunity, even though when that opportunity comes for the reliever, the game twists in a way that the game does not for a hitter. There's a great example of it. You're right. You're exactly right. There, when Jordan Walker struck out, he had a chance to really change that game offensively, and he struck out. That's all forgotten, not even asked about. I did ask about it, but, you know, he saw only sliders in the at-bat. The entire at-bat, I think, was five consecutive sliders, right?
Yeah, why would you throw him anything else right now?
Right, exactly. And so there was no adjustment, nothing. And that you could argue that that was where the game was lost just as much
100%.
As giving up a run.
100%.
But that's not where the focus is for the results-based view of writing about the game, talking about the game, looking at the standings about the game, looking at the final score and the box score and everything. But Marmol's point is that's where their focus has to be, is the similarity between those two things and giving those players the opportunities then to work out of it. I still think you could make the argument that Svensson is part of that. The one thing that also got pushed back, and we talked about this in New York with the manager, is where guys are in their careers, I guess, right? Yeah. Like Leahy's on the rise, right?
Right.
Has last year, has momentum, has
he's stuff. Asserting himself, yeah.
He's asserting himself in a way that, like, Fernandez did last year.
Right.
So you have Fernandez ahead of Leahy until this past week. Now Leahy's ahead of Fernandez.
Right.
Then you have the next group is Roycroft, right? Roycroft, who's in the minors but has the experience and knows what they think. You know, the argument is he knows what it takes. So now Chris Roycroft is there behind Leahy moving up. And then you have Svensson, who's new to this whole thing. So that is how they kind of view, let's call it, the order of operations for where their relievers are. But at some point in time, somebody has to jump. Somebody has to be thrown into a spot because the game will demand it where they jump. And I think you can make a real case that that was the moment for Svensson, right?
Because
an off day the next day, see what happens.
Yes.
And, you know, let him go up there with his bowling ball sinker, see how he does on that stage, see if he holds the lead. If he doesn't, or if he has to go length, then you make the move on Thursday ahead of a road. I mean, it all lined up for him.
This is really, again, I beat this horse and I'm going to keep beating this horse. This is, again, the back that they're not adaptable. Mm-hmm. They have an idea. They want to do a certain thing. They got a plan to do it. We're going to do the plan. We're not going to adapt to the circumstances. You know, it's not ideal for Svensson to be in that spot, but it's not ideal for a guy that's been a gas can all season long either. Mm-hmm. I mean, Ryan Fernandez is a really good pitcher. I think he's going to figure it out, but he's lost. The slider shape is off. It last year, if you look at it, last year it had more horizontal break and less vertical break.
Yeah, now
this year it's a different shape, and it's all in the middle of the zone this year. That's his best pitch. He can't survive without that pitch.
His best pitch is his fastball, but that's we can.
His most successful pitch last year was the slider because hitters hit like 180 against it.
Because
he located it. If you look at last year where he threw it, it was always glove side, lower part of the zone, either in or out of the zone. This year, it's all in the zone and a lot in the middle.
Yeah.
And look, how many times did we hear? How many times did we hear Dave Duncan talk about this stuff? You know, when it comes to a pitcher. Mm-hmm. Your job is to do your job or we will get someone else to do it. Your job is to make pitches and the guy's not making pitches. And I think Derek, if we rewind this a little bit, it might not have to come down to that choice of Svensson in that spot on Wednesday in Atlanta if you would have used him at different times during the week. But because you don't, you're still riding the same guys, Leahy three games in a row, Maton basically every other game since the start of the season. So Maton's not available because he's been ridden too hard. So in any of those other games, if you had decided maybe you're going to give Svensson some time or give him a chance, he's pitched once since being here. Remember how we used to talk about, remember how you and I used to talk about the break glass in case of emergency guy?
I do.
And how ridiculous that was. You the can't have players on the team and refuse to use them.
Right. You just can't. You voluntarily make it a 25. Yeah, exactly. Matt Swanson has pitched once. You're right. Who does he think he is? Ryan Helsley?
Saving him. I mean, you can't say, I mean, look, I don't have negative thoughts about Ollie Marmol. I think he's a guy that's very smart. He thinks things through. But I also think that as an organization, they're not creative. They're very stiff in what they want to do. They say, we're going to do this, and this is what we're going to do, and we're going to do it until we just can't do it anymore. I don't understand how you can look at this circumstance and think that doing it the same way makes sense.
I think they've been creative with Steven Matz and rewarded for it. But I think you make a lot of good points. I just wanted to add that in there. But it also, what they're doing with him also complicates the bullpen.
Well, this is what I say. So let's draw that out, because this ties into what we're talking about. Where is the team's biggest need for Steven Matz?
Oh, we're not going to agree on this.
Well, I mean, right now you have two people that you can give the ball to get to Helsley, because Romero and King stink. So do you need a sixth starter more than you need someone that can pitch in the seventh and eighth inning and get the ball to your closer?
No, you do not.
Okay,
is that Steven Matz?
What's that?
Is that Steven Matz?
Of the starters, who else is it?
Liberatore.
But he's pitching successfully, and he's one of the guys you're trying to groom. But Matz is a free agent at the end of the year. He's not going to be in your organization. But how does he benefit the Cardinals the most?
Do you know he can do that job?
I know that he's throwing the ball well. I know that he misses bats, and I know he can't be worse than Romero and King have been. Those guys are walking the house, and then they're getting hit when they're not walking people. I mean, again, I know it's not fair, because Matz wants to start, and
earned to start.
Absolutely. But what are we talking about? What a player wants or needs, or what the team needs?
I don't really know anymore. I got to be honest. The answer changes depending on who you're talking about, right?
Well, this is kind of the point, right? So if the priority is growing young players,
I mean, like, it's an Abbott and Costello thing. I don't know anymore. Like, it really depends on the guy.
Right. But again,
who's up first?
If we're going to be consistent with an approach,
we're in the seventh.
If the team is going to be consistent with approach, if this is a development year, if this is about giving young guys the chance to do things while also competing, then that means the old guys have to wear it. The old guys have to be the ones that are not getting deferential treatment.
Well, so this is what I just began this podcast by asking, isn't that the way to develop a young roster, is to have old guys who wear it?
I mean,
but not wear it, but
carry
it.
But by wear it, I mean, you're not going to get the tiebreaker when it comes to staying in the rotation.
No, and that's very
right. See what I'm saying? What I'm saying is, like, Matthew Liberatore can be here for the next 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years and be a valuable starter. Matz is not going to be. So if we're talking about the choice between one helping in the bullpen and the other, well, clearly the shorter term guy is the one that should be the one doing that. Now, it's not fair to Matz, because he's pitched great, but Miles Michaelis isn't going to do that job because he can't miss bats. You're not putting Fetty in that spot. And I think, and I understand there's more to it too, right? Because where does Matz have more value if you want to trade him in July? Well, he's got more value as a starter. If he's a starter who's pitching competently, that's going to be more valuable than a reliever. I understand, but like this is why it's such a weird situation, because there's no easy automatic do this answer, and we're getting conflicting messages. Are we trying to compete? Because if we're trying to compete, then you have to maximize your 26-man roster. You have to use everybody on it, and you've got to use them the way it benefits the team the most. And if we're not worried about that, then fine. We're not worried about that. And I'm okay with that tack, too. Like, if we're not that worried about what the record is, okay. But just don't bury guys.
Yeah.
And then that means you probably have to use that Memphis shuttle a little more.
Well, that's what they want to do.
If they want to do it, why aren't they doing it?
I don't know why. That's a great question, but it is.
They keep saying it, and they've done it with one guy.
And it's built to do that. And I wrote about how, like, that was the idea, was this is not just a limited eight-man bullpen. This is definitely a cycle.
sure.
bullpen, and they built the whole thing to do that, to have Munoz come up, to have O'Brien come up, and to have those guys go down and Roycroft come up. And they built this thing to do that, and the 40-man is engineered to do that, and it's time to start doing that. And I don't know if it's because the pitch profiles, I've asked, you know, like maybe the pitch profiles aren't what they want, or, you know, they make decisions on, you know, under the hood numbers a lot.
Sure.
Which
and that's important.
It is totally important. But
so it's also important when you're getting rocked.
It is very important when you're getting rocked. So all of this peels back. The focal point of what I asked you is this notion of, like, isn't winning an important part of development? And, you know, I think, you know, we're probably going to have a chicken and egg conversation.
Yeah.
In the sense that, like, you're going to argue that the chicken, the talent and everything is there. And I'm going to talk about how it's the egg, and it takes some nurturing, which that analogy fits far better than I thought it would when I started that sentence. Wow. But let me make my case by asking you this. How many of those games against two teams that are contenders and are better than them could they have won?
Oh,
they had seven games decided by 8 runs.
Mm-hmm.
They were outscored on that road trip by 8 runs. That's it.
Yep.
That's crazy.
There's at least 3 or 4 games they could have and should have won.
So, like, if you're on the Cardinals team and you're like a young player and you see that road trip 1-6 versus a road trip that is 3-4, right? Or 4-3,
mm-hmm.
right? Don't you have the different feel? Like, I mean, literally, right? Like, don't you feel differently about that road trip if the results are more positive for the standings for the team, and not just you have to cling to, like, how you played?
Well, how does that feeling get Jordan Walker to stop laying off sliders?
Well, but you pick
that feeling one doesn't
guy
make a
who's
guy
struggling.
I mean, right, well, I don't care that, who name a guy. How does that make Scott. Alec Burleson stop swinging at pitches off the plate? How does that make Mason Wynn make better swing decisions? Like, I think this is the problem.
Well, but like because Thomas DeJacy, Victor Scott, mention a guy who had a good road trip.
Well, no, I understand. But what I'm saying is winning games is not going to make guys who are struggling do the thing that they're struggling with better.
I totally agree, right? It's going to hide
right, so,
it.
So, right, well, exactly. So that feeling is not going to change whether that player's developing into a better player, and better players is what you need to win. So if they're winning those games, it might feel a little bit better to a guy like Ryan Fernandez who's struggling. But right. It's not going to help him locate his slider any better. It's not going to help him throw the fastball the way that they want it to with the characteristics that they want it to have. And I think that's why it's a chicken or egg, right? Because,
right.
Because yes, being in a good place mentally can help you relax, and relaxing can help you perform better. But I don't see how that's going to change swing decisions in 0.3 seconds, because you're at the plate. You're not thinking, wow, we won 3 games on the last road trip.
Well, I just don't, I'm not talking about swing decisions. I totally agree with you.
But that's how you get better.
All right, let's look at it this way, right? Okay, so there were some base running mistakes, right?
Yep.
Thomas DeJacy had 2 of them.
Yep.
If Thomas DeJacy does the right thing at third base and the Cardinals win that game, this has nothing to do with swing decisions.
Right.
Everything to do with understanding the importance of making a decision in the moment and how that wins a game. And they win that game. He gets a positive reinforcement for it. We can't say, well, that was a learning experience for him because it cost the Cardinals a run, without also looking at the other side saying, well, that was a positive reinforcement for him because he did the right thing.
Right. Okay.
That's
but
what,
like,
I'm talking about.
See, like, calling, and I'm not saying you didn't do this, but somebody calling that a learning experience, come on, man. That's a base running mistake when you're 13. I don't give a crap if you're a rookie. That's something that I would make
my
14-year-olds run polls for, man. Like, it's just common sense.
I agree with you.
So I'm not going to.
That doesn't change the fact that it didn't happen.
No, it did. But I'm saying if he did that right, it doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to then do other things right.
Didn't say it was. But there is this. Like, look, there were some games there where the Cardinals played very well.
Yeah.
And I thought it was very interesting that some of the veterans talked about this, that they had to do so many things right just to have a chance to win. And that's what this team is.
Yes,
it
is.
They have to play so well to get to just have a chance to win, and then they lose, right? Because of a pitch, because of a whatever, right? The idea that you have to do so many things well to win, I think, and you can push back at this, but I think that's a force multiplier for when you have better talent. Because I have watched so many baseball games where the team with the best talent doesn't always win because it makes so many mistakes that unplugs that talent. And the team that has talent and also doesn't make mistakes is awesome.
Would you, if I were going to say for a 162 game season, I'm going to give you the stupid, more talented team or the smart, less talented team. Which one are you taking?
In a season?
Yeah, for 162 games.
Okay, I'll give you a straight up, no equivocation answer if you'll let me follow up with a question.
Okay.
Are we agreed?
Yes.
So, counselor? Okay. I would take that team for the season.
Which one? Right,
no questions asked. The one that makes mistakes and has overwhelming talent.
Okay.
I would take that one for the season.
Right.
Who are you taking in a 3-game playoff series? Who are you taking in a 5-game playoff series? Because I ain't taking that team.
I'm going to take the team that's got the strikeout pitchers and the big power bats.
Right, and the one that plays the game better than
to a degree, but you can overwhelm that with ability.
I mean, you can, but you need some kind of. I mean, look.
The best teams are both, right? We all know that.
Right. The best teams are both.
The best teams are not either or, right?
The Yankees were a superpower last year. They were superpower.
They were a bad defensive team, though.
Oh my gosh. It's almost like you just agreed with me.
But yes, but like we're talking about trying to get to that point.
You just agreed with me.
No.
I win. You literally just said they're a bad defensive team.
This is my point, though. How many teams are out there? Were the Cardinals a better defensive team than the Yankees last year?
This has been the podcast of baseball. Thank you for joining us this week.
Were the Cardinals a better defensive and fundamental team than the Yankees last year?
They were, but they didn't have the superstars. Close,
right. It's about players.
But I just said that. I just said that the team that learns to play the defense and do all the base running, do all that stuff better, and then adds the superstars is a better team.
Well,
that's a better team.
I mean, the team that is both is better. Yes, I completely agree. But if I have to choose one over the other, give me the players. Give me the talent.
Okay.
Give me the dumb superstar over the gritty gutty guy who makes all the right decisions.
Okay, that's great. You just agreed with me, though, because I was exactly going to – when two super teams collided, what decided the series?
Well, I mean, pitching probably.
Yeah, pitching. That's fair.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's usually pitching.
But they blew a game with a hearty lead because of foolish, you know –
No disagreement.
Clumsy,
I don't want to
defense.
Make the point that the little things don't matter. They obviously do. They're critical.
Well, and I'm not saying the little things matter more.
But you don't build the team from that. You build a team to do that when you have the talent.
It's almost like you're saying exactly what I said, where it's a force multiplier.
It is, but it can't be like the first thing. You don't learn. You don't win 90 games by just having everything, you know, done on a certain way. You got to have talent. You got to develop skills.
Yes.
You got to miss bats. You got to hit home runs.
Yeah. No, totally agree. You know what the Cardinals aren't doing this year is those things.
Right.
So if they want to develop, they're going to have to do this other thing.
Well, no,
and then when they add that talent.
I don't think this is a development issue.
Okay.
This is a winning or losing issue. Okay. If you want to win more games, you need to do those things. You will never get a disagreement about that.
Okay.
Games are won and lost by making smart plays, because if two teams are equal, the better execution is going to win.
Right.
You're never going to get me to disagree with that. I don't think that is about developing individual players, which is what the Cardinals need to do. They need to develop individual players to be better players. So then those things will matter more when it comes to doing them in critical spots. But if you're not a good team, it just doesn't matter. You're going to lose anyway.
Wow. And I guess that's the crux of this.
Let me change that. I don't mean to say it shouldn't. It doesn't matter. But you're still not going to be where you want to be.
I think that's fascinating. Like, and that's a big part of what this road trip was. Is it was a real clear litmus test on the difference between the Cardinals and the Mets. the Cardinals and Atlanta. You know, I think it showed that, like, the Cardinals could play a really good style of baseball, a fine-tuned style of baseball, and yet lose just because of the talent gap, the financial gap, whatever gap. And so I think in a lot of ways we are talking about the same thing. It's just that we're probably going to put our thumb on the scale slightly different spots, it sounds like.
Sure. I mean, I get, again, I
you want the individual performance and the individual development. So tell me what that.
I think what we're talking about, maybe we're just hung up on the word development.
No. Tell me. That's what I was going to ask you. Okay. So tell me, like, you've brought up Jordan Walker and his swing decisions. So tell me how this plays out to maximize, to determine his talent and to bring it out so that the Cardinals at the end of the season aren't like, well, we're moving on.
Well, I mean, there's two parts to it, right? I mean, you've got to be able to give him the tools he needs to make improvements, but he also has to do it. You can't do it for him, right? You can't say, because he knows I can't. He knows he can't hit the pitch, but he just can't stop swinging at it because he doesn't recognize it. He's selling out on fastballs when everybody's just feeding him sliders low and away. And when he starts laying off of that, he's going to hit. It's not mechanics. It's not talent. He's got the best bat speed in baseball, or at least one of the top two or three. He hits the ball as hard as Aaron Judge. Mm-hmm. He just doesn't hit it as hard frequently because he swings at pitches he can't hit. So that's that talent, that skill set can be trained to a degree, but in season, you just have to do what you're being told to do. And you feel like you can't, you've got to be willing to adapt. He's got to be willing to get called out on that pitch.
So what
he's got to be willing, he's got to be willing to take the pitch and have it be called a strike. And and that's okay.
How does he get positive moment? How do the Cardinals develop him on the job? And what does that mean to you? What does the development aspect of this mean to you?
Well, you have to see that particular, like, whatever your weakness is, right? Every guy's got a weakness. Every guy's got something that they're working on. Mm-hmm. So you're repping this in the cages. You're repping these things. And there are all kinds of tools from virtual reality tools to just, you know, pitch recognition drills that teams do. Like, you put a different color dot on each ball and you try to recognize the dot when you see, or the color of it coming in. And
that can Carlos Beltran approach.
Right. There's all kinds of ways to try to train your brain to do what you're trying to do, right? To train your eyes to see what you're trying to see, whether you're seeing spin, whether you're just looking at release point and be like, all right, I know when the ball comes out there, I can't hit it. And it comes down to, like, and you really have to just let it sink or swim, right? I mean, this is why that whole idea of runway matters, especially for a hitter, because you got to see it for six, they got to do it for 6 months. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that you can't learn that, but that is a hard thing to learn at the major league level, because pitchers don't make as many mistakes as they do at the lower levels. Lower levels, the number of mistakes is multiplied. You know, AAA, they probably make five times as many mistakes as a major league pitcher, and AA, it's probably 10 times as many mistakes. You know, like, you think that's low?
Yeah, I think it's exponential from one.
Maybe it's 10 times, right? Whatever it is, that's the point, though, right? Yeah. So he's not going to be able to learn to hit big league hitting by big league pitching by being in AAA. No. It's going to be trial and error. He's got to go out there and see pitches and see what works and you know, be able to make that decision. Now, again, there are a million drills. That's still not the real world. You know, again, you can get into the cage once. I forget the name of that fancy new the pitching routine. The trajectory where you can see an actual pitcher and the pitches are that pitcher's pitches. Like, that's great. I mean, you have all of that at your disposal, but in the end, you've got to do it in real time on the field. Mm-hmm. And for a player that's trying to develop pitch recognition, make better swing decisions, that's one of the hardest things to do, because you have to decide it in 2/3 of a second.
Right.
And, you know, it's not the same as making a mechanical change. It's not the same thing as changing a grip on a pitch or, you know, we're working on your anticipation as an outfielder to get a better jump. Those things are much more controllable. Those things are much more prep. You can do things in advance of the action to really help with that. In the batter's box, it's a reaction, and it's, you know, that's, and by the way, that's one of the reasons why it's very different than dealing with a relief pitcher,
right?
Where a relief pitcher is in control. the timing starts when they throw the ball. They are the ones that are determining the pace of how that goes within the pitch clock, of course.
There's a lot of apples to oranges comparisons there. I mean, because, like, look, hitters are going to get four opportunities, five opportunities in a game. A reliever might get one, right? And by definition, a reliever is a smaller sample size and more volatile than any other position on the field that is prominent, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you could argue that pinch hitter is fine. But a reliever, and I think that, you know, to me, that's really an interesting part of this is what is the equivalent? What's the equivalent? If you continue to give Ryan Fernandez setup spots, right? Close games, late innings, bridge to Helsley to work it out. What is the equivalent of that for a young hitter like Mason Wynn?
And continuing to bat in leadoff if he's not hitting.
Okay. What's the equivalent of that for Jordan Walker?
Again, putting him in a spot in the order that it doesn't help, right? I mean, if he's going to hit eighth, it's not the end of the world. Okay. If you're going to say we need you to bat fourth, well, it's going to be a problem.
should they start doing that?
Like, what's that?
Well, if they're doing that with Fernandez, where they put him back out there in a close spot, should they start doing that? Is that consistent with the development message to then do that with the hitters?
I mean, yes, but I would turn it the other way around. I think the way you're handling it with the hitters should be the way you're handling it with your relievers. Okay. Like you've got Walker and Wynn hitting near the bottom of the order for a reason.
Yep. Yep.
And the big difference is, like, as a hitter, you can hide somebody at the bottom of the order. They're not going to bat as often. They're only batting four times a game most of the time anyway. On the other side of it right now, they can't hide anybody in the bullpen.
Right. No, that's
they
fair.
They don't have the ability to do it. You don't have.
Well, there's fewer choices.
Well, you have a rookie you won't use. You've got a guy in Fernandez who you really can't use in those spots. You've got two other guys that are already starting to wear down. You've got two lefties that aren't getting anybody out.
Okay.
And you got a really good closer. Like, you're in a, like, this is why I talk about adaptability and circumstance.
So your argument
the best
would be
teams in sports adapt to the current circumstances and find a way to fill holes. I mean, look at the Brewers. They haven't had an ideal start when it comes to injuries. They've lost starting pitchers, but they find people and they put new people in positions when something's not working.
Right. No, they're great at it. They're really good at it.
Yeah. And again, like, I'm not saying that the Cardinals have any, like, automatic answers. There's no Paul Skene sitting at Memphis where you can be like, well, let's just call that guy up.
Well, okay, so real quick on that subject, like, you mentioned what Marmol said, that the cavalry isn't coming, right?
And
that
wasn't
his exact quote, but, you know, he was
something like that.
He said there's nothing down there that will help us up here, and that wasn't like some damning statement.
No, I agree with you.
That was just saying the obvious.
There's no closer down there, right? There's no eighth inning guy.
And also, like, no kidding, if there were a better pitcher there, they wouldn't be there.
That's exactly
right. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
That's exactly right.
I mean, like, there was a lot of folks who, like, wrote me and said, well, that sends a really tough message. I'm sure the people in Memphis loved it. And I wanted to reply to every one of them. I'm like, it's not something they don't know because of where their locker is.
Right.
Like, let's be real. They're not looking up at Marmol's comments in St. Louis and going, man, wow, that really doesn't say a whole lot about me. And not looking around Memphis and going, oh, right, I'm still in Memphis.
Right. Riley O'Brien's not in Memphis because he's a known commodity. He's in Memphis because he's had trouble throwing strikes and he's been hurt a lot. It's not that complicated.
Right. So, okay. So your argument is that they've reached the end of the runway for Fernandez. Would you argue that?
For this flight.
For this flight.
Okay. There'll be another flight soon flight.
When does that happen for Walker?
That's a great question, because, you know, when you're thinking about the importance of that player and what you want a first round draft pick to be, who was at one point, what, the fifth best prospect in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
What you want and need him to be is an impact player, right?
Right. So the ceiling is higher, the runway is longer.
Well, the nature of the position. You're batting eighth in the lineup most days,
right?
And he's actually playing decent defensive baseball. So, you know, it's not like he's a total drag. And that's the thing. Again, that's the point, right? Mason Wynn, when he struggles to hit, is still an elite shortstop. Mm-hmm. But he's still a positive impact. When a reliever is bad, there's no positive impact. There's no other thing that they're doing that's helping the team. Right. If you're getting shelled, you're obviously costing the team in that moment, but then you're also shifting burden to other guys who then have to physically bear that burden, and that will diminish decisions for games ahead.
So your
term force multiplier for when we're talking about the number of mistakes made, or, you know, doing the little things right, being a force multiplier. Well, the same concept exists in the bullpen. Everything totally that goes wrong there is multiplied by 10. Taking a bat at bat.
Yeah, no, and it's the same. I mean, that's the beauty of baseball, is it's the same thing when the starters don't provide innings, right?
Yeah,
it's not right, exactly. Just impact. I mean, it's the exact same thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, it is.
And
it
so
is.
I guess, to get to your question, for a guy like Walker, I probably have to give him somewhere near 450, 500 at-bats before I'm going to make a call.
Okay.
I got to – I mean, if you're talking about
more at-bats.
This season total.
Yeah, gotcha.
So if I get to July, let's say mid-July, and this is and it still looks like this, I'm going to have to start thinking about other directions. Not necessarily for this year's lineup, just long-term. Because I'm looking at a guy that might end up being a part-time player as opposed to a core piece. That's not a guy I'm going to dump. There's just no chance of that. He could be my fourth outfielder before I'm going to dump him with the level of physical ability that he has. He may end up just being a late bloomer. You know, I mean, it's not unusual for guys to sometimes not figure things out until they're in their late 20s. He's 20, 21, 22, 22,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you think about, and Gorman's 24. Max Muncy wasn't an everyday player in the big leagues till he was 27 or 28. He turned out pretty good. Like, some people just arrive at different times. So that's why, like, I'm not just saying I'm done with Jordan Walker ever.
Yeah,
but his short-term role could change if you get it 4 months into the season and you're not seeing what you need to see.
This is all really fascinating, and like I wonder where team results fit into this, and if you feel that the notion of how, like, the Cardinals talked about the value of winning at every level on the way, do you think that's over romance?
I do.
Okay.
I don't think it's wrong. I don't want to be, because nothing's wrong or right in any of this. It's just true to degrees, right? Because the Cardinals would look back at that time and say, well, we were having a lot of major league success and those guys were coming up and they were able to jump in and help us. But you also had rock stars carrying the load. Lots of them.
Yeah.
You know, in 2011, it wasn't two guys. You had Albert and Yadi and Berkman. And, you know, like, you had a whole group of guys that were good players that were carrying the load.
Matt Holliday.
Right. This is really my good. Point. Right. No, this is my point. Is all throughout that era of success.
Yeah.
The biggest thing that led to that was major league ability.
No, totally agree.
They had major league stars. And I do agree that having some experience of playing in meaningful games matters. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't matter more than your ability to do your job. John Jay was more than just a quote unquote winning player. He was a guy that did he was a good outfielder because he got great jumps. He was a good hitter because he could recognize pitches and make an adjustment. And that wasn't just because he won.
Right.
That was part of why those teams won.
Because those guys could
do those things.
You're making my argument again. And I was not arguing that the tail wags the dog. I was arguing quite literally exactly what you just said about John Jay, that his ability to do those things was, again, a force multiplier.
Right. But if he couldn't hit, none of it would have mattered.
Correct. Absolutely. But, you know, there are a lot of folks who can hit, and what adds to, well, they're not anymore, but there were.
Yeah. There used to be.
There used to be kids gather around.
Yeah.
Tell me about baseball when guys
can hit. When people could hit.
Let me tell you about the days before spin rate and,
and drive line
and mulching pitchers.
Yeah.
Let me tell you a tale of yore when there were 300 hitters and guys would have, you know, dramatic hits and not be pitched around. Let me tell you about that time, kids. You're staying my case. So I have a really, I think this, if you'll give me a little bit of a moment to explain, I think this could be a little fascinating. Do you think at all that the swing decisions that you're talking about these young guys making, that learning how to excel in situations at the plate could help?
Sure.
Like, for example.
Sure.
Thomas Sagesi comes up leading off an inning, right? And the Cardinals need a base runner. They need a base runner, right? They don't need him to drive a double. They don't need him to do that. If he gets the pitch to do it, then great, do it. Go ahead. You know, hit it out of the park. Fine. You know, that's a run. But that's not what they need from him at that moment. They need him to find some way, any way, absolutely a way to get on base, right? That's his job there. Jordan Walker the other day comes up with a chance to change the game. Damage isn't the only way to do that, as Wilson Contreras showed, right? Wilson Contreras came up with a chance to win the game, and he had a 9-pitch plate appearance that put the game back in Nolan Gorman's hands. Wilson Contreras' patience there and his willingness to go like, I'm going to take a situational at bat. I'm not going to try to win the darn thing because I can't trust the guy behind me was huge. That was huge. That was a big part of that game. So do you think performing with a winning approach in situational hitting would help some of these swing decisions?
It can. I mean, I don't know that it automatically does. I mean, because you've got to see, this is, and maybe this gets back to another bigger, larger point. Maybe some of these guys arrived too early before they had developed that a skill, and it's hard to do that against major league pitching. Like,
totally fair.
I think Jordan Walker arriving when he did was clearly too early. He was not ready for the major leagues. I understand why you brought him north. I understand what he looked like in Jupiter and all of that. But I mean, it's literally the oldest cliche in baseball to not fall in love in March or September. You know, and if you're not seeing that in a player, and again, maybe the same point, although I think if I remember right, Mason Winn actually was better at that in the minors than he has been in the majors. As far as like drawing walks and not just swinging as wildly as he has in the major leagues. Mm-hmm. So I hope for him being able to get back. I have hope for Walker too. I mean, it's not, these are not unfixable things, mm-hmm. but I would also wonder, like, how many of the Cardinals' homegrown guys are that way? Now, like, Donovan and Nootbaar are definitely not. Mm-hmm. They're the polar opposites, right? They are the opposites. They take great at-bats, and they do a great job at that. So maybe it's just a kind of a randomness thing. But, I mean, Burleson's that way, Wynn's that way, Walker's that way. And
JC's that way.
So JC's a bit that way. Gorman's been, although, you know what? Like in 23, Gorman was not really that bad at it. He drew some walks.
No, Gorman's not that way.
Lately, but he's not normally.
No, he's just such a different hitter than any of these guys we're talking about.
Which sure, but
why
I mean,
they want him to play.
But where he fell off the planet last year was swing decisions. He started swinging at pitches he couldn't hit.
Well, his chase rate
jumped dramatically from 23. 2023.
He also had a significant hole that was in the strike zone that pitchers could exploit.
Sure. So when you have those two things, you stink.
Yeah. Well, actually, I think when you have the first thing, then you make the other thing happen.
Well, sure. But I mean, I'm not sure the hole didn't exist in 2023, but when you're not getting yourself out.
I mean, it did. I mean, I can take you through it.
Yeah. No, I don't doubt it at all.
But he had one of those, like.
It was a knock on him when he was being drafted.
Right. He had a slant to his swing was the best way to describe it.
Yeah.
And when he couldn't catch up to pitches, which all of a sudden he was seeing a high velocity and a high zone.
Yep.
At one area, and his slant only gave the bat in that area briefly. About
3 inches.
Correct. Yeah. He had to time it. It basically,
if his timing wasn't perfect, he was done. Yeah.
He was basically golfing with a moving golf ball.
Yes.
That is what he was doing.
No, you're right. That's a great analogy.
He was in at the tees, he was at the tips, and instead of teeing off with a stationary golf ball, he was trying to hit a moving golf ball, and he had to hit it just right.
Yeah.
That's what was happening. And that was leading to the swing decisions because he was trying to race or he was trying to cover or whatever. I mean, that to me. And Burleson is in the same way. Like those guys, it's very clear. And maybe Sagesi too. Those guys, it's very clear what the fix is, what their skill is, and where those two things might not meet. Just to be blunt.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Alec Burleson has to unlock power by the nature of his role. Right?
Yeah. You can't be the big slow guy who's a slappy hitter.
Right. He has to unlock power. Now, to unlock power, he's got to be less oriented on contact and veer a little bit more, not entirely more, but a little bit more towards what Gorman does.
Right.
Right?
Right.
But Alec may not do that.
Right.
He may not. He may not, like, hey, man, contact and that stuff got me into the big leagues.
That's why a lot of guys don't change.
That's why I'm going to be here to stay.
Right.
This worked for me. And it's like, cool, you'll have a career.
You'll be a bench guy. You'll be a pinch hitter.
Yeah, it'll be moving around. You'll go from team to team. You know, you'll have a career. You know, the game doesn't allow for you to go out and hit there. You're not going to go win a batting title doing that.
No.
I'm sorry, but you're not.
No.
Again, gather around, kids. It used to be. That used to happen. It's not going to happen. You know, so what are you going to change or what are you not going to change? And I think there's like a real clarity there. But like with some of the guys, it is how do they develop this when the same thing keeps happening? And how much is enough to break out of that? And this is like the question for the Cardinals, right? Is how much time is enough time to break out of those habits? How much time is too much time to determine they never will?
Yeah, I mean, that's the age-old question in baseball, right? And by the way, this is why you see the J.D. Martinez's of the world, right? They get overlooked, they get cast aside, yep. And then boom, all of a sudden, here they are. More often than not, though, once you're cast aside, you're gone.
Justin Turner.
Right, yeah. Justin Turner. We talked about Max Muncy earlier, right? The A's basically just kicked him aside. They were like, well, he's just not going to figure it out. And the Dodgers were like, yeah, he'll figure it out. And he did. Mm-hmm. And this is also kind of bringing back to the same point of the offseason, right, Derek? That this is all partly a result of the failings of the organization over the last few years to keep up with technology, to keep up with the freshest ideas in the game, to keep up with having enough staff to cover people and to work with your young players. Like, I think this is the result of some of that. Like, all those decisions, all those changes that didn't happen that are now happening under Chaim Bloom, right? Now all this stuff is being fixed that wasn't going the right way for how many years since COVID? 3-4 years?
Yeah.
This is what happens from that. You've got people that haven't developed skills and star players, top prospects, priority players who should have almost had like a personal hitting coach employed by the team following them from level to level to just work with them and them alone to make sure that they were what they needed to be. And I think that's why the hard part is looking at it at the major league level and saying, how are you going to change it? How are you going to get better? The only way you can do it is to just keep doing it. And then at some point you have to say, okay, maybe what we have to do is, like, let's say let's go to the trade deadline. You're at the trade deadline. You're not a playoff team, but Walker still looks like this. Then you might have to start picking and choosing who he faces.
Cool.
So he's not facing the guys that are good slider guys because they're going to get him. He'll face lefties. He'll face guys that are maybe, you know, fastball curveball guys or fastball changeup guys. That's what you're going to – you play yourself into that eventually. Yeah. Is that time August? I don't know. I'm just using that as a time later in the year.
I mean, that time might be 2027. Too.
It might. Yeah. Right. Exactly. It could be. And you know what? This is all fine. Like, I think we are fixated, and rightfully, we're fixated on these young guys because this team needs them to be good. But this is going back again to the failure to have enough good players.
Yeah.
Because back in the day, you could let a young hitter struggle because Albert and Berkman and Freeze and Craig and all these other guys were going to hit. And you can survive with a guy struggling to hit and who's going to learn maybe over 3 years instead of pop in and be able to go. They just don't have that.
Yeah. Wow.
And they tried because they brought in Goldschmidt and Arenado. It's just that didn't work the way that they hoped it would for as long as they wanted it to.
Yeah. Folks who have listened this long into the podcast, brace yourself, and this might lead to a sequel. But I'm not sure I agree with you.
Oh,
when you said we all think that they need these guys, like, I'm not sure I agree with that.
What, they don't need star players?
They need star players. I didn't say that. You said these guys.
Well, you mean we think they need these guys for the next step to happen,
right?
Okay,
yeah,
that's fair.
that these are the star players.
Yeah, maybe they're not. Maybe it's Weatherholt and who's coming next.
Right. Or
I mean, and by the way, I'm a believer. I can't wait to see him here. I think he's going to be legit. But, you know,
I just want to be realistic about it. Like the Cardinals were really good when they had the benefit of Albert Pujols existing and Yadier Molina existing.
Right.
And Adam Wainwright was a trade and Chris Carpenter was a lottery ticket who turned out great. And they outfitted that team with the Matt Holidays, who was an outside talent brought in, you know, and then they've had this team where they continue to do the Matt Holiday move, right?
Yeah.
Where they add Paul.
That's been their go-to.
That's the Jim Edmund move is maybe the better way to put it.
Scott Rowland.
The Scott Rowland move. Okay. So they continue to do that. And they did that with good success until the Paul Goldschmidt, Nolan Arenado run. They had the great moment, the great season together. Albert Pujols was a part of it because that's the story of the first 25 years here of this century. But that worked. That worked for that year. But they never outfitted it with the pitching.
Right.
They always went like one step shy of going to get like a great pitcher.
Yeah.
They weren't developing.
Yeah.
And that is where all of this began. I know that like sometimes they want to talk about the tragedy of Oscar Tavares and where that went with their ability to develop the next star player, the guy who was going to replace Albert Pujols. You know, Matt Carpenter came out of the system. Matt Carpenter was really good.
Yeah.
For enough years in a prominent spot in that lineup for him to have been that player from their home system.
Sure.
What they didn't do is continue to develop the pitchers.
You're right. They haven't developed a good starting pitcher that they kept since Flaherty.
Correct. And
that was 7 years ago.
Right. And in 2019. Correct. Yeah. Six years ago was at his
best. I mean, he's already in his first free agent contract. That's how long it's been.
Right. He's in his second one. He is already in his second free agent contract.
Oh, that's good. Right. Good point. Good point. Yep. Yeah.
He's already in his second free agent contract with the Tigers.
That's a good point. Yeah. 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 I mean,
so
but like, that's how long it's been since they've developed a starting pitcher that they've kept.
Correct. Dakota Hudson is not the number three starter this year. And that is,
that's your problem.
That's your problem is that he isn't the modern day Lance Lynn.
Right. Or, you know, they haven't had a Lynn, a Carlos Martinez, a Michael Wacha, a Jaime Garcia. For a long stretch, they had one every other year, basically.
Correct. And so all this talk about the position. Shelby Miller, who they flipped for. Yeah. But like Tekoa Roby can be that. Looks like he could be that if he can stay healthy. But is he a year? Is he 2 years away? And I think in a way they're setting their watch for him, right? For when they're going to contend. We can argue that.
Yeah.
But the notion that, like, you go, they need these guys. I don't know if that's the case. I think they want these guys to be stars.
Well, if these guys aren't it, then it's going to be a lot longer than they hope.
Or
they're not going to go out and pay for the stars.
Or they went the wrong direction.
Sure.
And they can't undo it.
Sure. I buy that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd buy that.
That's where they're at.
And the problem is that if this group of younger guys isn't what they're hoping, then it's going to be a while.
Yeah.
I mean, because I'm a big Weatherholt fan, but one guy like that's not changing everything. You know,
and on the draft pick coming up.
And is that guy going to need to be a top starter or is that going to be a bat? I don't know.
We'll see.
It going to be a high school guy or a college guy?
Well, in this year's draft, I'm going to bet college guy. Seems that way. Unless it's the third baseman, or unless
what about
it's the
last what about, Holiday. I say, what about Hernandez?
I mean,
there's people that are like, that's the next Jackson Jobe right there.
Yeah, I know, but I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. It sure seems like, boy, they can't miss on that pick.
No, and they can't. No,
one way to not miss is to get the best college player.
It's true. The odds are better with college guys.
Because there's going to be one there with track record performance, either pitching or hitting. There'll be one at five.
Yep. But that guy will also have, if he's a pitcher, been used a lot.
He will. Or take the Holiday. Because
I mean, if you could take Holiday, you take him.
If he gets past the Rockies, it'd be stunning.
If he's at five, you gotta take him.
Correct. There's no question.
I mean, he's a legit candidate for one.
He is a legit
candidate. It would be like Weatherhold at seven. It's like, no-brainer. Let's go.
Well, also, like, just the last... It's okay. Take the last name. Trust the family.
Sure. You know
it. Do it. I mean... Go ahead.
Yeah, that family's pretty good at baseball. They're pretty smart, too.
They're really good. Yes, they're athletes. It'd be good to have you do that. Okay, so let's close here. Because we began with this thing. And I would love to know your view of this. In this transition, reset, retool, whatever, development season, would the Cardinals be in a better place after a 4-3 road trip versus a 1-6 road trip? Or are you a nihilist and it doesn't matter?
No, it definitely matters. I think that they would be in a much better place. And I think this month wasn't going to be easy.
No, it's brutal.
You know, I mean, you had a tough schedule. And the fact that you've let games get away, it's hard to get those back. You know, that. And so, yes, it would matter because the team's sense of urgency is going to be at a different level if you're a game over 500 versus five games under. Right. I mean, the team, like if you're a manager, if you're a president of baseball operations, it's a lot easier to be patient when the results don't stink.
Well, this is where I think it will be a really interesting season.
Yeah.
Is if they dismantle this team, the results are going to get worse before they get better.
Oh, I agree.
And if there's concern about what does that do for an atmosphere, and players will talk about that. If you're in August and you got all these young players and you're preaching about development, but they all know that the team just yanked the plug on the season, they're not going anywhere in October. That hard dog day game in wherever it is at Wrigley, they're not the better team. They're not the, I think it really creates a fascinating crucible for you to say, we'll go develop as a winner, guy.
I have a hot take on that. If that's how your mentality is as a young player, you're not going to be great anyway.
Okay.
You should be out there competing every game, period, the end, because that's what you do. And you should have the approach that I can go do my job every day. I don't need to worry about these things. And do my job and if everybody else does their job, then we'll win games. If there's a 22-year-old player there who's going to get beaten down because the other guys around him aren't doing their jobs, he's not going to be great. He's just not. He doesn't have the mentality.
I like that a lot. I do not want to dismiss the power of positive reinforcement.
No, it helps. But you know what helps more? Resilience. Toughness.
No, being talent able to does.
Talent's first, dude. Talent's at the top. Everything else is below that.
But don't I will change say the this. Wheeler platform.
But I'm going to tell you, talent first. But after that, it's competitiveness. It's fight. It's compete level. That's the next step. Everything else follows that. If you don't have that bulldog in you, then it doesn't matter.
I think it's fundamentals, but I think fundamentals.
Well, that's a part of it. If you don't have that, I'm going to compete every at bat, every game, then you're not a great player. You will not be. How many great players don't do that?
I can name a few. They have great salaries. Yeah, one of them.
No, I'm talking about legitimately great players. The guys you're like, I'll go to war with that guy.
Oh, well then no.
No.
I mean, not to beat up but Anthony Rendon is a great baseball player.
No, he's not.
He's a great talent.
Yes, he's very talented.
Great money. He's quite good at baseball. He just doesn't like it.
Right.
Or that's like, yeah.
But you can still work hard and grind and not like
it. That's the rarity. That's like the outlier. That's the outlier. That's the outlier. That's the amazing artist who doesn't want to paint.
And he may have gotten to the point where he doesn't like it because he's been hurt so much and it just sucks.
Yeah, that's fair. He also really didn't seem keen when he was at his best to be at his best.
No, that's true. That's true. But I guarantee you, he grinded and worked. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been good.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what we do. Grind and work.
Yeah, we just don't get paid like that.
Oh, no, we don't.
Derek's like, I do.
The podcast money's huge.
Yeah, dude. You can't get past that.
Yep. That is Kevin Wheeler, KMOX, 11:20 a.m., their cleanup hitter. Right? No.
Oh, I'm the utility guy. Let's be honest.
That's not true.
I'm on three different shows. I'm here where I'm needed.
You know, so you're the bullpen catcher still.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, that's not a utility guy. That's a guy that never gets in the game. At least here I'm in the game.
Okay.
I'm the Brendan Donovan.
Getting all the hits.
I'm going to play everywhere. Do whatever.
You're on a radio station. You're getting all the hits. I get it. That's good. That works. That works. You can listen to Kevin on just about every show. You're on every show. You're on DGS.
Sometimes Gas House. Redbird Rush Hour every day.
Redbird Rush Hour every day. You can listen to that at 11:20 a.m. and the new FM station.
104.1, right? Baby. There it sounds go. So. Just imagine like this volume on FM, man.
Oh, I have it in my ears right now. It's been great.
Derek's like, I'm trying to get away from it right now.
I have a text message from, you know, where I'm up in the Treehouse Studios at my house, and I got a text message. Who are you screaming at? And I think it answers itself. It's Wheeler.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious answer.
And don't think you snuck the fastball by me there, champ, when you said you've been on this show a million times. I get it. I ask a lot of you.
I love it, dude. I would do this every week, but nobody else wants that.
I think it'd be fun.
I don't think anybody wants the same guest every week.
I'd be exhausted. Well, they have the same host every week. Oh, so
dude, you would definitely be tired because I don't stop.
Yeah. I guess, or maybe I need to bow out. You need to guest host, and that would really get everybody. We need to have like a reset. This is a transition year for the best podcast.
Just to get, just to give everybody a little picture of how I don't stop. As soon as we're done with this, I'm going to host a show for 4 hours, and then I'm going to host another show for an hour.
You're relentless. You are to talking what I am to typing.
Yes, yes. We are both to those things what marathoners are to their craft. You just keep going.
No, I stumble, though. And I have marathoners don't retrace their steps. As a typer, I totally retrace.
No, but they don't stop. They just keep on pushing.
They don't stop. No, that's very true. It's the long walk from Richard Bachman / Stephen King. So, all right. I have no idea where this is going to go. This season for the Cardinals, that road trip was really fascinating.
Yeah.
They played well enough to win. They played really compelling baseball games. And they blew it in moments. Whether it was a moment on the bases, a moment at the plate, or the ones that got the most attention was the moment in the bullpen. Yep. You can walk out of that road trip going, this team is going to spiral. And I wouldn't be surprised. You could walk out of that road trip and say, this team is resilient and is going to bounce back. And I wouldn't be surprised.
Totally agree.
And I think a big part of that is they're about to play 7 games against the NL Central, and there isn't a more cozy, comfy place to be than the NL Central. So we'll see what happens.
Hopefully we're saying that in 7 days.
Yes. Maybe I'll have you back so we can have this sequel.
Because then Kevin, the vibe's going to be different, right? Every homestand, the vibe's different. Every time they go on the road, the vibe's different.
I don't think that's healthy either. Like these wild swings of emotion. But that's
not helpful.
But that's what baseball has been for, you know, decades. And, you know, and it's one of the reasons why the Cardinals are great in the sense that, like, the notion that that it feels like college football, right? Like the Cardinals lose opening day and it's like, well, they're not going to the national championship. Like, is that kind of feel, right? But man, everybody needs to pace themselves with this.
Yeah, this is going to be a roller coaster, I think. And look, doesn't mean it's going to stink. It might stink, but it could also be all right.
I think it has the widest variant of any season.
Oh,
you know, I mean, like, look, the losing season, I'm sure people,
what do you think, like a 22 game delta? You know, like,
I'm talking about, like, emotionally, like, they could leave this season with the team that finished 10 games under and be in a worse spot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because none of their young guys panned out.
Right.
Right. I mean, think about that. You could finish this season having 78 wins and go like, well, that's a little bit more than they were projected to have. That's good. And go, but none of these young guys are going to be in the middle of the order next year.
Right.
That's the worst spot.
Good luck, Heim. In that scenario.
Yeah.
But it could also be that you find out that some of these guys are at least solid contributors and you've got a lot of answers for the number of holes you need to fill. And now you got to go get a big one.
The number of, don't count. It's going to be crazy. crazy. All right. Yep. No. And we'll talk about it on the best podcast in baseball. You can find the best podcast in baseball wherever you get your podcasts. It's available at stltoday.com. It's also available there at iTunes and Spotify. Please rate and review the podcast. The ratings, the reviews, they help us know what direction we're going. They've helped us a lot this season. You know, I like to hear back, get some feedback about how the pacing of this year and the changing of the guests. You know, let me know about that and how often is too often for Kevin Wheeler.
Never.
how often is not enough, Kevin Wheeler.
It's never enough.
You can let me know there on iTunes. Subscribe to the podcast. Subscriptions make the sponsorships possible. And it is because of the sponsorships that this podcast is available weekly. So thank you for that. The best podcast in baseball is brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. It's a production of all those folks that I mentioned, stltoday.com and me. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould. For Kevin Wheeler, Miami grad, great Hurricane bullpen catcher.
Yeah, I was great at that. Yeah,
you were great. You were great.
I was really good at warming up relievers.
Yep, and yeah. No, you did. You could help the Cardinals then, right?
Oh, get them loose.
Yeah. Well, not so much. You were really good in this podcast for warming up criticism of the relievers.
Well, of the handling of them more. I mean, I feel bad for some of the guys, but...
No, that's very compassionate.
Yeah. Yeah, nobody empathy. Wants to stink. Nobody empathy. Wants to stink.
Empathy, yeah. Man. Who knew? It's not out of stock. Thanks, Kevin.
See you, buddy.
If you work in quality control at a candy factory, you know strict safety regulations come with the job. It's why you partner with Grainger. Grainger helps you find the high quality and compliant products your business needs to inspect, detect, and help correct issues. And the sweetest part is, everyone gets a product that's as safe to eat as it is delicious. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic. But today, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and diminished our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make a variety of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more. All made right here in the USA, from growing the cotton and adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride. Purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
There's nothing like sinking into luxury. Anabe sofas combine ultimate comfort and design at an affordable price. Anabe has designed the only fully machine washable sofa from top to bottom. The stain-resistant performance fabric slipcovers and cloud-like frame duvet can go straight into your wash. Perfect for anyone with kids, pets, or anyone who loves an easy-to-clean, spotless sofa. With a modular design and changeable slipcovers, you can customize your sofa to fit any space and style. Whether you need a single chair, love seat, or a luxuriously large sectional, Anabe has you covered. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your home. Sofas start at just $699. And right now, you can shop up to 60% off store-wide with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Add a little to your life. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.